Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The End of Poverty: Economic Possibilities for Our Time is a nonfiction economics and development book by Jeffrey D. Sachs, first published in 2005. It argues that extreme global poverty is not an inevitable condition, but a solvable policy problem shaped by geography, disease burden, weak infrastructure, and historical disadvantage. Sachs combines economic theory with field experience to explain why some countries remain trapped at the lowest level of development and what kinds of interventions can help them escape. The book is both an argument and a policy blueprint. It calls for targeted aid, debt relief, investment in health and transportation systems, and stronger international cooperation through the United Nations and the Millennium Development Goals. Rather than treating poverty as a vague moral issue, Sachs presents it as a measurable global challenge that can be addressed through diagnosis, coordination, and sustained public investment. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the poverty trap as a structural explanation for extreme deprivation. Sachs's central claim is that the poorest countries are not simply poor because they lack effort, markets, or discipline. They are trapped in conditions that prevent self-sustaining growth from beginning in the first place. Low incomes mean weak savings, which limits investment in farms, roads, schools, and health systems. Poor health and disease also reduce productivity, while remoteness and weak infrastructure raise the cost of trade and basic services. This framework matters because it shifts the question from why poor countries do not behave like rich ones to why the normal mechanisms of development fail to start. Sachs argues that many countries need help reaching a basic threshold of capital, health, and infrastructure before ordinary market forces can work effectively. The result is a structural explanation of poverty that emphasizes initial conditions and external constraints rather than blaming national failure alone. Secondly, clinical economics and the case for country-specific development strategy. A distinctive feature of the book is Sachs's idea of clinical economics, which compares development work to medical diagnosis. Just as doctors do not prescribe the same treatment to every patient, Sachs argues that economists and donors should not assume one universal fix for all poor countries. Each nation has a different mix of obstacles, such as malaria, landlocked geography, fragile institutions, debt, or weak transport networks. The practical implication is that development policy should begin with careful diagnosis, then match interventions to local needs, and finally monitor results over time. This approach rejects rigid ideological formulas, including both pure market fundamentalism and one-size-fits-all aid programs. It also makes the book more operational than many broad anti-poverty manifestos, because it insists that policy must be tailored, evidence-based, and context-sensitive. The method gives Sachs's argument its technical shape and helps explain why he believes aid can work when it is targeted rather than scattered. Thirdly, why Sachs places aid, debt relief, and infrastructure at the center of poverty reduction. Sachs does not present poverty reduction as a matter of charity alone. He argues that poor countries often need a large, coordinated infusion of external resources to build the basic conditions for growth. That means roads, ports, electricity, water systems, clinics, schools, and agricultural support, along with debt relief that stops scarce public funds from being diverted to old obligations. In his view, small or fragmented aid programs are not enough to change the underlying dynamics of a poverty trap. Instead, assistance must be substantial enough to create a visible development push. This is one of the book's most controversial claims, because it treats aid as an enabling tool rather than a distortion in itself. Sachs also links these investments to human capital, healthier populations, and better infrastructure improve productivity, market access, and long-term self-reliance. The logic is cumulative, not sentimental. Aid matters because it can help countries cross the threshold from emergency dependence to durable economic participation. Fourthly, the Millennium Development Goals and the moral responsibility of wealthy nations. The book is also a political and ethical argument aimed at the international community. Sachs uses the United Nations Millennium Development Goals as a framework for organizing global action against extreme poverty, viewing them as practical benchmarks rather than symbolic ideals. He argues that wealthy countries have the means to do much more and should treat poverty reduction as a collective responsibility, not an optional gesture. This part of the book connects economics to international ethics. If extreme poverty can be reduced at manageable cost, then failure to act becomes a policy choice. Sachs also stresses that globalization does not automatically help the poorest countries. Without deliberate rules and funding, it can leave them further behind. His appeal is therefore not only to compassion, but to enlightened self-interest and geopolitical stability. By tying aid to global commitments and shared targets, he attempts to turn poverty reduction into a coordinated public project rather than a series of isolated national efforts. Lastly, Strengths and criticisms of Sachs's development model, The End of Poverty has been widely praised for its clarity, urgency, and concrete policy focus. But it has also drawn significant criticism. Supporters value its refusal to accept mass poverty as unavoidable and appreciate its optimism about what coordinated action can achieve. Critics, however, argue that Sachs places too much confidence in aid and technical planning while underestimating corruption, political conflict, institutional weakness, and the difficulty of absorbing large inflows of money effectively. Some also see the book as too centered on top-down solutions and not attentive enough to local politics, social structures, or historical power imbalances. These criticisms are important because they highlight the tension between moral clarity and implementation complexity. Even so, the book remains influential because it forces readers to confront a hard question: if poverty is partly a result of solvable constraints, what obligations do governments and global institutions have to remove them? Its value lies not in offering a perfect formula, but in making the case that extreme poverty is a tractable policy problem rather than a permanent condition. In conclusion, The End of Poverty is best suited for readers interested in development economics, global public policy, international aid, and the ethics of inequality, policymakers, students, economists, nonprofit professionals, and general readers who want a serious argument about how poverty reduction actually works will find it especially useful. Its practical value comes from the way it connects theory to real-world policy tools such as aid design, debt relief, infrastructure, and public health investment. Its intellectual value lies in its challenge to pessimism. Sachs insists that extreme poverty is not a mystery to be admired from a distance, but a problem that can be diagnosed and addressed. Compared with many books in the same genre, it stands out for combining moral urgency with an explicitly programmatic framework. It is not just a critique of inequality, and it is not merely a celebration of markets. Instead, it tries to show how international coordination, targeted investment, and long-term commitment can make poverty reduction a feasible historical project rather than a vague aspiration. If you would like to support Jeffrey D. Sachs, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.